Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Got another dude! Hey!
What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
Dudes to the right, dudes to the left, stuck in the middle with you.
Got another dude!
Heisman Trophy. Bronco Nagurski Award. Ultimate dudes.
Got another dude.
O-line U, bunch of dudes.
Lot of dudes.
Yeah! Another dude in the house. Yeah!
Welcome to the Lot of Dudes podcast, presented by Fourth and Dude. Brought to you by Boston College 24/7 and Armchair All-Americans. Season 3, Week 3. The Eagles avoided getting caught in the spider's web on Saturday, taking care of business against Richmond with a convincing 45-13 victory. A.J. Dillon led a potent offensive attack, racking up 518 yards of total offense as the maroon and gold jumped out to a 21-0 first quarter lead and never looked back. On today's episode, we'll recap how the Eagles defanged the Spiders, talk dude or pooed, and preview the Friday Night Lights showdown against the Kansas Jayhawks this weekend.
Matt, I know it's FCS and not the most exciting Saturday, but the Birds are still undefeated, and that's all that matters. You can't control who's on your schedule. You just play the games in front of you. And you can't get to 15-0 without starting 2-0, so no complaints from me.
2-0, by the way, for the second consecutive year. And
yes.
The fourth time in the Daz era, so how about that?
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, normally, because it's like UMass, Holy Cross, but the fact that we have an ACC win included in there is certainly a bonus. We have a ton to get to today on this short week. We're dealing with a short week, just like the players and coaches are. But before we get into it, today's Richmond recap is brought to you by our friends at MyBookie. Matt, as I'm sure we'll discuss, we got absolutely hosed on the Birds, -33.5. But the over did hit, which still keeps us at 3-1 on the year. If you found $100 on the street, would you pick it up or keep walking? Of course you would take the money. So why do you keep listening to our winners and not betting on them? That's why you got to go to MyBookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay when you win. Let's face it, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. I wouldn't be telling you guys to bet with them if they weren't the best. Do the smart thing. If you're going to bet this football season, bet with MyBookie. They've got all kinds of props, live betting, parlays, futures, you name it. No matter your style, the football season is the best time of the year to be betting, period. So you don't want to miss out on any of the action. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code CHAIR to activate the offer. That's promo code CHAIR. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Matt, credit to both of us. We are seeing the board so clearly right now, both for BC and college football at large. I think we're both right near the top of our weekly spreads pool. And a little spoiler alert, because our predictions are coming much later on, but I love the Birds again this week.
Oh yeah. No, it's an absolute no. What is it? 18 and a half, or maybe it's already up to 20.
It's up to 21.5, but yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I'll save it for my pood, but what Richmond did in that last minute was unbelievable.
I mean, it's criminal. There should legitimately be an SEC investigation. It was wrong.
It was the most. And Dewey's. I'll save it.
We got a lot of grievances today for an FCS 30-point win. But
yeah, that really was the story of the game, because there wasn't much else going on. But let's recap Richmond, because I guess we have to. So obviously this was a glorified scrimmage, and you don't like to read into FCS schools. Everyone remembers 2015 when we beat Howard. What was it, 76-0?
Yeah.
And later that year, we ended up going 3-9. So these games tell you literally nothing about anything. So anyone trying to read into anything here, just stop doing it. With that said, here are a few takeaways. it was great to get off, to a great start. So the offense, so Zay had that 46-yard jet sweep that was, four or five plays in. It was almost too quick for those of us that couldn't figure out how to stream the game. More on that to come as well. But I'll tell you, so obviously last year, slow starts was a problem for this football team. And to get touchdowns in 5 out of your first 6 drives, that's a pretty good way to do it. And Matt, first half through the first 2 games, the Eagles have racked up 730 yards of offense and 63 points. Not bad.
Not, Not bad at all. Yeah, I saw some grumblings on Twitter and the message boards that people were unhappy with the performance. But like you said, the bottom line is you just cannot take anything from these FCS games positively or negatively, right? I mean, as you said with Howard, like we can't take anything positive from that. And I don't even know what people really got that negative about this game, but I thought it was just the performance that we needed just to take care of business against a severely inferior opponent, never close. Get out of there healthy, as we'll mention. Matt, one thing I've actually been pretty excited about over these first two games is Dylan's, I would say, sharing the workload. Maybe against Vatek was a little bit, you know, more by design of, you know, mixing it up a little bit because Vatek was keying in on them. But his carries are down about 25% through the first two games last year, or rather through UMass and Wake last year. So games 1 and 3, which are, I think, more comparable, you know, to Vatek and Richmond. So overall, I think it's good. We saw him get a little bit overworked last year, so I think spreading it out a little bit, he's got 40 carries in the year so far, sharing the love with Bailey and Levy and our guy Garwo, you know, I think has overall been something that I'm happy to see, and I think will, again, help us. We got to play 15 games this year. People aren't talking about that, so you really got to spread them out.
That's a good point. And it's a testament to, you know, the recruiting in the tailback position. I mean, BC legitimately has one of the best stable of running backs, and Bailey has absolutely emerged as a more than capable number two. He would start for a lot of football teams. So I think you're exactly right. And it, you know, against Richmond, obviously, you want to get Dylan out of the game as quick as possible because, you know, you want to save him for that back half and make sure he's 100% healthy. Fully agree with you there. And that's really what the Eagles sort of did. I mean, they a lot of people were, you know, had issues with AB. The fact of the matter is, you know, this was a game plan that was built to run. Our offensive line was going to dominate Richmond. This is what you do with an FCS opponent. You go vanilla, you overpower them, and that's what they did. They racked up, what was it, 350 something yards of total running total running offense, and that's, you know, it's really the way it should be. I don't want to show Kansas or anyone anything
exactly
that we
right?
don't need yeah. to. So between Dylan, Bailey, Garwo got in there at the end, as you saw, and not just running the ball, but also, you know, getting out in space and catching the football and working on some things. I mean, again, this was a scrimmage. You work on stuff like that so you can, you know, you can whip it out against, you know, more challenging opponents. But overall, I think that was the perfect way to do it. Let the O-line dominate, open up the holes, and the holes were wide open. Dylan and Bailey weren't touched a lot of the time. So I think it was a pretty complete performance offensively. If you want to nitpick Brown, you certainly can. He made a couple questionable throws. But again, if you're going to read that much into an FCS game, then you get too much time on your hands. They got out of there with a convincing win, and we're on to Kansas.
Yeah, exactly. I think the other thing that I did like to see was, with the underlying theme of we're not taking too much from this, I did like to see, like you said, throwing the ball to the running back. Specifically, Dylan had a couple of them, but that's a weapon that I think has always kind of been talked about as like a weakness for his game and just something that we don't really attack. But I know it was something that he was working very hard on in the offseason, and so far through the first two games, we've seen a little bit of that. I think that's a very nice extra wrinkle for us to have. It will open up the running game. It will open up the deep ball. It will open up, you know, Brown on the ground. There's a ton of things that will do. And then the other thing, Matt, that I was, you know, very positive on was the kicking game, which is, I would say, one of the phases that you actually could read a little bit into. Boomer drilled the 30-yarder, which, you know, shouldn't be an accomplishment in the big picture, but at BC, if you can drill a 30-yarder straight through, that's awesome. And he looked good on all 6 extra points. I think there was one that might have been a little hairy, but still went through 6 for 6. So that's overall a very positive sign. Like we talked about last week, he did miss that one, you know, 40 or 45-yarder, but it wasn't a horrible, horrible miss. So overall, he's definitely getting a passing grade from me so far, which is, again, going to be crucial if we get into these, you know, late season and you know, close games.
Yeah, 100%. And on that note, well, I guess let's talk defense too. I mean, it was a pretty solid performance. There were a couple breakdowns, I think, on that touchdown, right? And again, we're still nitpicking here
because nitpicking, yep.
This stuff happens. You get a little complacent against a team like Richmond, but that touchdown on, you know, middle of the field, I think it was a breakdown in coverage between just a miscommunication between the linebackers and the secondary. Obviously, you know, that can't happen against better opponents, but, you know, better that it happens here than otherwise. But overall, it was a pretty solid performance. I thought the linebackers stepped up huge. Max Richardson in particular had another great game.
Sacks Richardson.
Man, I suck at remembering his name. I know, that's bad. If there is one negative, I do want to pick on the defensive line a little bit. This is one of those teams that you really have to, you know, again, these are, our D-line are 3 and 4 star recruits. And, you know, Richmond's obviously not, and they don't have a lot of scholarships to go around. So this should be a lopsided matchup. And I didn't really see that. And part of it is, you know, Richmond has this gimmicky offense where, you know, they have the mobile quarterback and, you know, they had a pretty good game plan, all things considered. But, you know, it would have been good to see our D-line get in there, get pressure. I think they only had one or two sacks all game.
So. No, I think they had no sacks. They got a couple hits, but I don't think there was a single sack on the board.
You know, I thought that, but then ESPN.com had a sack, so it messed me up, Matt.
Maybe it might have been like a quarterback run or something.
Yeah, right, yeah. I think you're exactly right. But anyway, the point being, you know, it would have been good to see, you know, guys like Yergin and maybe we're just spoiled. We're used to seeing, you know, dominant DNs like, you know, Zach Allen, obviously Harold Landry, et cetera. But it seems like the pressure this year is really coming from the linebackers, which makes sense to an extent. I mean, Bill Sheridan's a linebacker guy and, you know, the way that he draws up the blitz, it seems to come from the linebackers rather than, you know, off the end. And whether that's a talent thing or a game plan thing, I'm probably not qualified to speak on. But you know, you'd like to see a better performance up front, just to make sure that we're heading in the right direction, we're improving. So to nitpick again, I think that would be one area that I was a little disappointed in. But outside of that, you know, they got the job done, and again, they held them to 13 points. Wish it was 10 for my wallet's sake, but you know, overall, not much to complain about.
Yeah, I'm with you. Do you want to segue? I think like that's a nice segue into some of your grievances here with that wishing you held them to 10. You want to just go right into it?
Yeah. So my pood mat is not covering the spread. it was just, and everyone saw it. And for those that had money on the game, it kind of snuck up on you. And I thought BC 33.5. I thought that was, you know, an aggressive line, just because, you know, you figure you go up early, you take the starters out, and then, you know, it's third strings against starters and, you know, letdowns happen, whatever. But I felt pretty good about 33.5 pretty much the whole game, Matt. And then all of a sudden, you know, we're getting ready to close out the tab at Dewey's. All of a sudden, Richmond's driving down the field. And it's like, wait a second, this isn't going to happen, is it? And the game's out of hand. You know, we're up, what, 45-10 at that point? And yep. Mancuso treats it like it's the most important thing in the world. Whoever was quarterback at that point, and the whole team was in on it. Like, hey, we got to get 3 points. We got to screw over Matt number two and make sure that he doesn't win his cover. And they call the timeout, which you don't do when you're usually down by, you know, when you're down by, what, 40, 30 points, whatever. You don't typically call timeouts. You want the game to be over. You move on and, you know, thank you for the payday and we're out of here. See ya. But Richmond decided, hey, we're going to call timeouts. We're going to do a 1 minute drill. And the kicker, who, you know, I don't know why he's not on our team, just drills the 45 yarder right down the middle. Nothing I've ever seen before. Like,
yeah, it was an amazing kick. It was an Adam Vinatieri kick.
Right in our face. Yeah. Dewey's went silent. And I've never seen that before. And it was just, Matt, that's my pood. And it's, you know, our investigators are looking into it. It's an active ongoing investigation, whether the Richmond guys had money on the game. And it's not just the 33.5 cover. It's also the over, right? I think the over hit as a result of that.
It did hit
too.
The over. That was a good thing. Cause we did say go on the over. So overall, you know, we ended up going net minus the VIG, I guess. But overall, it wasn't the end of the world. But for those who are not getting into the over-unders, who are just going straight up Eagles, you know, minus the points, like, yeah, that sucks. It was horrible. It was irresponsible for them to call a timeout. You're risking injury for your players going against bigger and stronger guys. That coach honestly should have been fired on the spot for that move.
It's such a dagger when you chalk it up as a win and you move on and you're...
I sent the victory tweet out. I sent the victory tweet out both for the game, and obviously that incorporates the spread as well. And then 3 minutes later, no longer is it a fully stress-free Saturday.
And to do it from 45 yards when...
You're right.
When's the last time BC hit a 45-yarder? So that one hurt a little extra. But that's all right. We'll double down on Kansas. And like you said, it's a favorable spread. So we'll bet the mortgage on Kansas and go from there.
So switching gears back to the positive side, my dude for this week is staying healthy. Like we talked about in these FCS games, a lot of it is just you're hoping to get some reps for some of the younger guys, trying to work on a couple of different things. But the big thing that you need to avoid in these games is injuries. And we did just that. Came out of it completely healthy. Again, these are just like practice and summer camp. You just got to take care of business and avoid injuries. On to the next one. There's nothing that you want to see less, much like you don't want to see someone tear an ACL in practice. It's just as bad if you're – not that it's ever a good time to tear an ACL, but it's especially – awful when you're doing it against a team that you're going to run out of the building by 35 points. So everyone stayed healthy. No one went down. And
did
like
AB,
we've talked about,
bang up his nose at one point? Did that happen or did I dream that?
His helmet got ripped off, I think, on a run, and it looked wildly uncomfortable. but that's just aesthetics.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was never really concerned. Yeah, but you never, I mean.
I'm sure he does fine with the ladies at Boston College, regardless of if his nose is, you know, completely banged up in five different ways.
AB is married to the game. He has no time for that.
Good point. Very good point. Love to see that. What's your positivity for the week here?
Okay, so this is switching gears a little bit here. My dude, and I wrote this down a few days ago, and I'm coming back to it now. This kind of seems like a hot take now, but the Red Sox being eliminated from playoff contention is my dude.
Okay.
Hear me out, Matt. Okay. If you recall last year, right, the BC Miami game conflicted with, I believe it was game three of the World Series, Red Sox Dodgers. And I would just prefer, you know, if we're going on the road to Charlotte, if we're going to be 15-0, I'd like the city of Boston to be behind us. And mid-October is really when the hype is going to build for this football team when we're 7-0 heading into Clemson. So I'd like to not have to compete with sort of a kind of a bullshit Red Sox playoff push. So, you know, call it a silver lining, call it a hot take, because I think I actually mean it, which is not a, you know, being a good Red Sox fan. But we won last year. We don't need to win every year. I mean, this is BC's year to, you know, to go to Charlotte and all that. So that's my dude. The fact that the city of Boston, you know, there's no other distractions. It will be this Boston College football team being 7-0 heading to Clemson with the whole city behind
it. It's actually not. That's not your worst take, to be completely honest. I was a little shocked when you first said it. If you think back to in 2007, when we were ranked number 2 in the country, that was, again, right in the middle of a World Series run there as well. So to have, you know, again, you think about it in the fall in the city of Boston, like the Patriots, you know, obviously people care about them on Sundays, but these games don't really matter for the Patriots until the AFC Championship. So there's definitely a void to be filled, and this might just be BC's year. So I love your outlook on that.
That's a good dude for me. I feel good about that one too.
Yeah, that's a strong one. Again, my pood is off the football field as well. So Lynn Swann, the athletic director at USC, was fired earlier in the week. Pete Thamel put out a report listing short list of candidates that USC would be considering. And of course, none other than our best friend Martin Jarmond was on that list. So my pood is just the athletic director carousel and rumors. We talked about this before in the coaching search, but there is nothing worse than when you have, you know, especially a blue blood program like USC, and you know that they're circling the waters and your guy is one of the fish in that pond. So Martin, please don't go. You've done so much in your time here at BC, and you have so much left to accomplish here. The people love you. I know you love the city of Boston. I don't know if there's any podcast hosts that would have as much of an affinity to you in LA. They don't care about sports in LA. They care about sports in Boston. So please don't go. But that's my pood, is even having to worry about that. We've got enough to worry about over the course of this season, and there's going to be enough stress for us week in and week out. The last thing I need to do is now have to worry about our future president, who's currently our athletic director, going completely across the country for a program that I think I kind of hate.
Yeah, and it would be an aggressive move. I mean, I'm sure he'd get a nice, you know, payday, and USC has probably a little more prestige than Boston College does. I'm willing to admit that, but you have a lot more to gain at a place like BC where the expectations are much lower. And, you know, I think he's done a pretty good job fulfilling them to this point, but I don't think his work here is done. I think he'd like to see, you know, through, you know, whether it's whatever this football team does, whatever the basketball team does, whether it's finding a new
facilities,
coach.
Well, we need basketball facilities. Also, we need new uniforms and new logos. That's like his undertaking, and he hasn't had a chance to do that yet.
Right. I kind of get the feeling that he's, you know, he's obviously a tireless worker, and he's done a ton on social media, communicates with the fans as well as anyone in the country. And I can get why he'd be an attractive hire. Obviously, he's done great things here, but it's a lot different going to a place like BC, where, again, I mean, whatever you can do positive. And you talk about like the tailgate restrictions, you know, beer in the stadium. He's already done a million good things that previous ADs haven't been able to do. But you go to a place like USC, and you know they expect to win championships across the board in every sport, and they have issues. You know, when you talk about the Varsity Blues scandal, they get all sorts of things that Lynn Swann hasn't been able to deal with. So I think that's, you know, while an attractive job, and I'm sure you'll get paid handsomely, I think there's a lot off the field that he would have to deal with that, you know, I personally wouldn't want to. Yeah, I would be the USC AD if they asked me to, obviously, but I think there would be a lot.
Does your current company know that? I feel like you should share that with your accounting bosses and just let them know that you're on the market.
I'm just saying, if they ask, I'll think about it. Okay. But but you know, obviously the hope is that you know, MJ wants to finish what he started, I guess, is the point.
Yeah, I agree. I think you talk about a little bit, he's come in here and he's ingrained himself so much in the Boston College community. And I think a lot of us now look at him, you know, we associate him with Boston College in a major way now. The unfortunate reality is that he's not, you know, a BC guy, you know, I guess, you know, by nature, right? He didn't go to school here. He didn't kind of earn his chops here, so to speak. He's only been here for a couple of years. So no, it would not shock me if he went out to a prestigious program. But it's so funny to think about, like, from our perspective, you and I were the athletic director at Boston College. Like, they could double our salaries and I still don't think we would even consider going, right? So it's like a different mindset of someone who is ultimately trying to climb the ranks. So if he does go, I certainly would not blame him. And that's what I think is going to make this process so hard, because it's not like, oh, there's a 0% chance it happens. I'm going to be very stressed out until USC, you know, comes up with the favorite. But hopefully they want to stick with someone in the Pac-12, someone with West Coast experience, someone with football hiring experience, because I guess Clay Helton's 2-0 right now. But there's a good chance that within the next 2 or 3 years, if not, you know, the next few months, they'll be needing to hire a new football coach out there. So a lot of questions. And I guess all we can do now is pray. And if we do run into Martin at either Rutgers or Clemson or any of our other potential meetings that he's not aware of yet, I don't think, but that we're working on, we will definitely do our best to convince him to continue to stay and make Chestnut Hill what we all, you know it can be.
Yeah. So, and obviously the popular take here is, you know, he's obviously well connected to Urban Meyer. Clay Helton's days are likely numbered. Although they do have this freshman QB that single-handedly beat Stanford, so things might be. Yeah,
they
look. Up for,
I mean, they
USA.
Look good. They absolutely good. And are they? I think, are they ranked this week?
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me just because of that one.
Yeah, I mean, they're on prestige and they're 2-0 and a win over a top 25. Also, the top 25, as we can get to in Duteus Corpus in a little bit, kind of sucks right now. Like, there's a lot of room on the bottom of that top 25 that I think anyone, you know, anyone 2-0 could pop up there and it wouldn't be like an outrage.
Right. Right. But his connection to Urban Meyer might be an attractive thing for USC to
stop. You're making me nervous. Can you stop giving them these ideas, by the way?
It could be a, you know, decent package deal. They're interested.
But just stop giving USC these ideas. You don't need to incept them. I'm sure they're aware of that.
Our listeners, so that's something to think about.
Exactly. All right, let's go to a lighter subject here, and let's get to Dude of the Week. I'll kick it off. So I'm going to go with Zay Flowers this week. Another electric touchdown, 46 yards on the end around, 3 touches at the end of the day for 92 yards. This guy's just an absolute lightning factory. Every time he gets anywhere near the ball, something is going to happen.
What is a lightning factory?
He generates lightning. He generates electricity.
So electric factory.
Yeah, but I already said electric, I realized earlier in the sentence.
We got a lot of complaints for saying the word electric. You can almost make it a drinking game, the number of times that Matt and I say the word electric. Sorry to interrupt. Keep going.
No, it's all right. I was going to say this is somewhat of an honorary Dude of the Week, since I think neither of us had him last week when he definitely deserved it. I think it was like a little bit of a, you know, prisoner's dilemma where we both expected the other one to have it. So he got off without the prestigious Dude of the Week honor. So now he at least has one to put on his trophy case.
Yeah, pretty good stat line for him so far. Something like 7 touches for 200 yards and 2 touchdowns.
It's outrageous.
Yeah,
it's absolutely outrageous.
Pretty good average there. So yeah, I'll co-sign that one. That's a good one. My Dude of the Week is going to be me, Matt.
Okay, interesting.
So and it's a Dewey's related story as well. So death taxes in Dewey's being incapable of competently streaming a football game. That happened again on Saturday. I made the decision to make the trek up from Philadelphia to go to Dewey's in New York, hang out with Matt and the boys. And I should have seen it coming. I mean, this is every single year. Dewey's just, and this time they just didn't even know that it was a streaming issue. In previous years, they've at least like had technical difficulties. So it was somewhat, you know, while still egregious for having a game watch and not being able to watch the game, it was at least understandable. In this case, they just had no idea what was going on. So anyway, long story short, 3:30 rolled around, and I think, Matt, you were first to the scene where you said, hey, I think they think it's on ACC Network.
It was so obvious that they were completely blindsided. So they did their whole pregame video that they do at Dewey's, which is this big hype video, and then they flipped all the TVs in the bar to the ACC Network, which was like the Georgia Tech Furman game or something. And it was so obvious that they were just like, they didn't know that anything was going on. And you and I knew it immediately. I'm sure there were plenty of others who knew it immediately, but an absolute disaster. I don't understand how you can be so ill prepared. I mean, that's like your job as the game watch bar is to watch the game,
well,
right? That's your single job.
It turned into our job, as it has for, I think, 3 consecutive years now, at least once per year. So I went up to the guy, the DJ, and be like, hey, man, you have to go on accnetwork.com and stream the game. And we found Dewey. We tracked Dewey down, and he was able to, after about 20 minutes, they couldn't connect to their own, their whole...
they didn't know their Wi-Fi password.
Exactly, yeah.
Outrageous.
Yeah, and then they couldn't log in. Very long story, but anyway, I'm the dude of the week. I brought Dewey's, or I brought the BC game to the Dewey's bar. Otherwise, none of you guys would have seen what happened. So I'm the dude of the week this week, Matt.
Well, we did miss the first touchdown, and I will, again, credit to you. The fact that you offered to basically use your phone as a hotspot for 3 hours so 200 people at Dewey's could watch the game. Yeah. I mean, that was like a borderline first ballot Hall of Fame move.
I have unlimited data now, so I'll tell you what. I'm not afraid to use it.
Right. I mean, I guess not. All right. So we have a new segment that we're going to debut this week that I personally am psyched about. I don't know about you, Matt, and your kind of opinion on how you think this is going to go, but... Us at the Lot of Dudes podcast, presented by 4th and Dude, have always prided ourselves in our ability to generate awesome nicknames. Obviously, we're the guys that gave you Tony touchdowns. This year, the entire linebacking core has been given a nickname, by one of us. So we're kind of red hot, and I think we're feeling really good right now. We came up with two, I think awesome ones personally.
Well, hold on. We gotta pat yourself on the back a little bit more. We are the ones that brought you the Hampshire's Accords.
Very fair, yeah.
Lucas, Big Swig, and Dennis. Tommy 12-inch Sweeney. The list goes on. I mean, it's kind of our thing. If we're good at one thing, it's nicknames. So
yeah, and I would argue that we are good at one thing. And it is nicknames, like you said. So you came up with two this week that I absolutely loved, if you want to knock these out. And then we'll get to the second half of this this segment.
Okay, one that I really like, and I don't know why Twitter didn't go wild for it. I think you had to be in CSUM, I guess, to understand it. But Marcus Valdez had a big, I don't think it was officially a sack. It was a big TFL, though. And this is what I've been kicking around for a while. One of the things I do preseason, and this is just, what I do for you guys as far as, providing content. I always like to look at the majors of each of the football players, specifically the accounting majors. I like to know who's studying what, I like to know who the finance guys are, who's the marketing majors that took the easy way out, etc. So anyway, so Marcus Valdez is an accounting major. So it sets up perfect because he obviously plays on the D-line, and the D-line position sacks the quarterback, and you guys already see where this is going, I think. So Marcus Valdez, CPA, Marcus Valdez, certified public sack accountant.
It's perfect.
So you guys get
it. It's perfect.
So, yeah, so it's better visually because the S is lowercase, so you still keep the CPA. You guys get it. So that's one I'm really excited about. And then Nolan Borgensen, I believe is his name, probably leads the NCAA in spring game production. He's been an absolute spring game legend for years now. And this year he's, obviously, playing well on the football, on the real football field, which is great to see. And Matt, he has a real nose for the football. So much so that he, I don't really have a good transition.
No, he
here,
likes
but,
to pick. He
likes to,
all he does is pick.
All he does is pick. Hence Nolan Boogerson.
I think those are absolute genius. I would put those right up there with Tony touchdowns.
We tweeted that one out. So if you guys aren't following us on Twitter, you guys are missing out. So pound that follow button. But yeah, I don't know if that one's like an everyday thing, but
every time he gets an interception,
I think that's exactly what it is. And so excited about that one. Excited about Marcus Valdez, certified public sack accountant. Yeah, it's all looking up. And I don't know, Matt. I don't see an end in sight. Every single person on this football team like has a logical nickname. It's coming too easy this year.
That's, again, another excellent segue. So the second half of this segment is we are going to take every week an Eagle that we have not yet given a nickname to, and we are going to come up with one on the spot. So this is the nicknameless Eagle of the week. Matt, let's start this week with Tate Haynes. So one of the great players in our secondary had an excellent interception on Saturday.
He did, yeah. So that's two turnovers in two games for him. He had the forced fumble against VTech.
Exactly. So I've got a lot of different options here from the notes in my phone that I was kind of making throughout the day. Again, caveat this, that it was after some of these, not all of these, were after many of the Bud Lights at Dewey's and the free beer and all that good stuff that they have there. So they're not all winners, I'll just say that much. But if you want to just kind of run through a couple of your ideas, I can run through a couple of mine. However you want to approach this problem, kind of let me know what works for you.
This is your segment. Do you want to do a snake draft? That could be fun. I have three.
I have 15. Do you want me to just, you run through yours, and then
You give yours, and then I'll chime in as needed.
All right, so I'll save my better ones for last. So again, some of these are horrible. Like, I just want to be very clear. But so many things rhyme with both Tate and Haynes that, like, there just has to be a winner somewhere in here. So let's start with heavyweight Tate, suffocate Haynes, or, like, suffocate Haynes because he suffocates the defense. Something Secretary of Tate – or like head of Tate's or something, government secretary of Tate, right? That's not horrible. House of Haynes, like House of Pain, Taterade. Gatorade.
I got I'll cut in here before everyone turns us off. I got Turnover Tate, which is kind of right down the middle. Matt, Turnover Chains, but spelled Haynes.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good one.
And then my last one here, and I wanted to get a third in, and this one I just came up with 5 minutes ago. Pick Tato instead of potato.
Pick Tato. Yeah, that's not horrible.
Yeah. So.
All right. So I had Tate Turnovers on my list. He Tate me, like he hate me.
Oh yeah, that's the winner right there.
And then I need to read out these last six because were put in my phone. These were put in my phone much later on in the evening. So the Haynes of existence, because he's like the bane of the defenses of the opposition's existence. Tate Mike from The Office. Two Haynes, like two chains.
We'll cut some of these. I think.
I bless the Haynes down in Africa. And then my personal favorite is just Hane, which next to it, I just put Batman. So I think that's a Bane reference.
Oh, like Bane, yeah.
So yeah, there's a couple winners in there. Tate, don't move the chains. So I like Tate. What was Tate chain? Turnover Chains. I like that. And I like He Tate Me. I would say those are the top two. So we'll take this offline.
Yeah, well, I think I'm ready to do He Tate Me. I think that one's the best. Maybe we put out a Twitter poll, though. Maybe
What was it? Two chains? Turnover Chains.
Turnover Chains isn't bad.
I like that.
Bad. Yeah, I'll tell you, Matt, you were really, and there's a peek behind the curtain for you guys. Matt was really hyping up this segment the past couple days. And Matt, some of those were really, really, really bad.
Some were great, though, right? I mean, you got to throw it. If you throw enough things against the wall, they're going to get a couple winners. That's just a fact.
I got one that's comparably bad. How about, Matt, Zay Flowers, Zapril Showers Bring May Flowers?
I mean, that's electric. Yes. Let's save it for next week. We'll put him on next week.
Yeah, perfect.
But that's a really good starting point. All right, so we'll see how that was received. I think overall that was pretty solid. Let's move back to a little safer ground.
Let's get
in Eagles in the Wild.
Yes, let's do that. All right, I'll kick it off. Eagles in the Wild. Obviously, yesterday was the first day, or was it? What's today? Tuesday. Yeah, we're recording Tuesday. Sunday was the first day of a full slate of NFL games, and you had the Tennessee Titans, led by Mikey Vrabel and Harold Landry, completely shut down the Cleveland Browns hype. What a game. And I know everyone was high on Cleveland. I like Cleveland this year, but not against Mikey Vrabel, man. Like, what are you, crazy? I think the Titans are the real deal this year. I like Mikey Vrabel's mustache. It's growing in real nice. You got to figure that's a tribute to Stevie Adazio. So excited about that.
I love that pick. Yeah, I will also mention Zach Allen and Will Harris squaring off in a tie, which for like a neutral BC fan is just great, right? Like, we love both these guys. We don't want either of them to have to lose. And we obviously don't care about which actual team wins that matchup between the Detroit Lions and the Arizona Cardinals. So them getting in a tie was great. And then I also think we need to give a big shout out to Mike Mayock, who's been all over the news, former BC great, current GM of the Oakland Raiders. He's kind of been a little celebrity this summer, appearing in Hard Knocks, knock on wood, if you're with me, and with the AB news, getting basically into a borderline fist fight with AB, who
we're
Team Mayock officially, and also Anthony Brown is a more talented AB in the Boston area, which I completely stand by the way, because Heisman, I don't think Antonio Brown won a Heisman, so I think we have the trump card there. But just a wild week in that saga, and I love having our guy Mike Mayock right in the center of it.
Yeah, 100%. One last Eagles in the Wild. Quick shout out to Bowling Green. That has become the Boston College Eagles of the Ohio River Valley with Scotty Loeffler. They got absolutely smoked 52-0 by Kansas State. Darius Wade and Davon Jones were held to like a total of 50 yards, which was the entire Bowling Green offensive production. So not a great look there. But that's Eagles in the Wild. We call it how we see them. Wish those guys the best of luck going forward. But not great.
Not great. And also a get well soon to Chris Lindstrom, first round pick, feared to have broke his foot in the opener where the Falcons were absolutely atrocious. So that is a shame. But that line also looked really bad too.
But did you see what they did, Matt? They replaced Lindstrom with our boy John Wetzel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they did. So
let's go. Eagles to the Eagles.
One eagle with another. One eagle a little more hyped than the other, but
fair. But Wetzel can do it all, man. He's like he's a Swiss Army knife. I love to see that.
He wasn't great on group projects, I'll say that. Anyway.
Fair enough.
Okay, so I think that does it for Eagles. Did you have another one, or is that it?
No, that was all I had.
All right, let's take it into the courtroom here. And court is officially in session here, Matt.
So a quick court session today. We don't have a ton to cover, but there are a few teams that need to be convicted of being absolute frauds like you accused them of earlier. So a great prosecutorial job by yourself. You want to just kick it off with Syracuse, who got absolutely embarrassed this past weekend?
I almost have nothing left to say. And I was speechless, but I actually wasn't, because what I was speechless was how dumb everyone else is. I you know, obviously I had a lot of hot takes about Syracuse, about how Dungy was their whole team, et cetera, et cetera. But I didn't really expect that to be as spot on as it was. I figured, you know, the experts decided to put them at 21 in the country. Everyone was high on them for a reason. But it turns out you guys were all just dummies. I mean, it was the most blatant thing of all time that Dungy willed this team to 10 wins last year single-handedly. And you can't just, you know, get rid of Dungy and expect them to pick up where they left off. It was never going to happen.
Yeah, I would say outside of, you know, the few blue blood programs, Dungy was a legitimate generational talent for, you know, most college programs. Like, he was a program changing talent, or at least a season changing talent last year. And I completely agree. And the other part that I loved was everyone raving about this defense, being like, yeah, well, we're going to lose Dungy, but this defense is going to pick up right where they left off. And they gave up, what, they gave up like 95 points? It was absolutely absurd. And it was amazing to watch. And Babers, you know, who by all accounts seems like a likable guy, but I'm a little sick of how much the media, you know, is loving him now when they have Steve Adazio in their backyard. So love to see him get knocked down a peg. And Tommy DeVito just looked absolutely pathetic. And, you know, the other thing I'll say, and you know, we can use this as a segue into Florida State, but this back half of our schedule that I think all offseason, everyone was like, oh man, we better rack up our wins before Clemson, because after Clemson, we're not going to win a game. Matt, this looks like a very, very, very manageable back half. Pitt does not look good. They struggled with Ohio and they got killed by UVA. Florida State snuck by ULM in a game that they probably should have lost, but that's, you know, neither here nor there. They still look terrible. Cuse now looks awful. Like, it's. I know we joke, Matt, but like, I think 10 wins is approaching the expectation at this point.
That's kind of what I was going to say that. I'm kind of worried about that because, you know, what's going to happen, right? We're Cuse is going to turn it around, or Florida State, probably not Florida State, maybe Louisville, right? They look okay.
Yeah, but they look. Louisville looks better than expected. But
gonna,
I don't know
what's going to happen is we're going to drop one of these games, and people are going to pull this card and say, oh, you lost to Syracuse at the Dome. They right. got smoked by Maryland by 43. Fire Daz. And that's the part I'm not looking forward to. When we said it all along that these teams were overhyped and BC was going to have no problem with them. So I guess, you know, that's sort of one thing I'm putting a bookmark in right now. We'll see how it goes later on in the year. But I was never concerned about this team. We said, and go back to the season preview episode. Go back to when we recorded the offseason episode in February. You know, we said, what did we say? I think we said Wake Forest was the team to worry about, right? And that's proven to be true. So, I mean, it really is Wake Forest, who hasn't really played anyone. I guess Utah State's
not bad.
Yeah. NC State's played literally nobody, but they're by default, like, being thrown up there as the third or fourth best team in the ACC. You know, the Coastal has some promising teams, although I don't really believe the hype with UNC, but UVA looks good. But the Atlantic just sucks so bad, and we've said it every single week. And I don't know, man. I think it's ours for the taking. And even Clemson, if you want to get that, I mean, they look mortal, at least. Their offense looks mortal.
It was not a very impressive. I mean, A&M also looked horrible, but that was not a very impressive win, you know, relative to being a top 10 win or whatever A&M came in as. But neither team looked good at all. I'm with you. And I am actually pretty excited for, obviously we won't be watching it because we have higher priorities, but Wake and UNC are playing in a non-conference matchup on Friday night at 6 o'clock. So we'll be able to see the first half of that or so before BC kicks off. But yeah, weird scheduling, Kirk, there.
I love that, by the way. They basically said, well, you know, we're rivals, or at least we're regional. Like, we want to play more than seven, you know, once every 7 years, but we can't because the ACC has grown to 14 teams. They said, screw it. You know, we'll schedule Wake, and, you know, it'll be a non-conference game. And I love that. I would love to do that more. I'd love to play more, you know, Duke and those teams more often. I agree.
When we went to UVA, what was it, 2 years ago? That was the Fourth and Dude road trip of the year. Charlottesville was like one of the coolest college towns I've ever been in my life. I would go there every year if we had a game there every year. So I'm with you. It would be nice.
I feel the same about Chapel Hill. That's like Raleigh. I love North Carolina. It's one of my favorite. It's probably my second favorite Carolina.
Fair point.
But it's still up there. And yeah, I'd love to play those schools more often. I think it'd be great.
Yeah, that's definitely a separate discussion, because we go down a lot of rabbit holes about how the ACC can fix their schedule, which I think is somewhat inevitable, especially as these conferences continue to grow and things like that, whether it's the pod system or just removal of divisions entirely. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The Atlantic right now does not look all that scary. Our schedule does not look all that scary. And the Coastal, for the normally terrible division, actually has, you know, more competition in it than what we might see on our side of it. So interesting times in the ACC right now. Not the banner conference that I think we all had hoped to be coming in, but where others fall, we have an opportunity, and you know, I'll certainly take that opportunity when it presents itself.
Yeah, one other scheduling note: Rutgers obviously played Iowa, and they didn't even come close to scoring points. So that's something I feel pretty good about. My one concern, I had several Rutgers related concerns, but one being that they brought in this new grad transfer quarterback. Turns out he kind of sucks, so that eases my fears a little bit about Rutgers. Not that I had a ton, but that was one of them. So that's an additional note there. But outside of that, I mean, not a ton happened this week. It was a, you know, FBS, FCS week for a lot of teams. So I don't think we learned a ton. Virginia Tech looked okay against Old Dominion. You know, not dominant like I was hoping.
Yeah, right.
To sort of validate our win a little bit. But I don't, again, you don't want to read too much into anything in week two.
Right. I'm with you. All right. We ready to close the court and get into Kansas?
Yeah, let's do it. Court's adjourned.
So before we get into it, Matt, the Kansas preview is brought to you by Blue Chew. Any of you dudes out there looking to increase your performance on and off the field and get that extra confidence you're looking for, listen up, BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know it works. You can take them anytime, day or night, after a tailgate or after a mod party. And since they are chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. If you could benefit from extra function and more confidence where it counts, Blue Chew is the fast and easy way to enhance your performance. Most guys talk a good game, but Blue Chew helps you follow through. They're prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code ARMCHAIR. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Promo code ARMCHAIR to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring our Kansas preview. So, Matt, let's get right into it. I'll kick my fun fact off. I've got a couple of them here for you, if you don't mind. So,
Matt, get this. I'm excited about our fun facts.
That's, yeah, you don't even need this extra confidence because you like your fun facts this
much. That's a Blue Chew pun.
Yep, it sure is. Nothing like a little male enhancement humor to keep the Kansas preview alive. So, in 2003, geographers proved that Kansas is actually flatter than an IHOP pancake. I'm not sure how they did that, but that's a fun fact.
That feels not grounded in science, Matt.
It does. In 2003, geographers did it, so I buy it. Speaking on the geography note, it is the geographic center of the United States, so really the heartland. They produce more wheat than anywhere in the country, one-fifth of all wheat in the U.S. With all the wheat they produce in a year, they could feed the entire world for 2 weeks, so that's a ton of bread. And then here's a good law from the city of Kansas where, or the city of Lawrence, where the University of Kansas is located. In Lawrence, you must honk your horn to warn the horses when you arrive within city limits. So a little old town road. I kind of like that.
I like that too. I'll tell you, it's simpler living out there in the, in the
flyover states. Life moves a little slower.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a fun fact, Matt, about Lawrence, Kansas as well. Did you know that it was, so Kansas, I think, was established sometime in the mid-1800s during the
Right around 1850s.
Yeah, it was in the Civil War era, and it came to be because settlers from Massachusetts wanted to go there and kind of put their stake in the ground, and they wanted to colonize it and make it a free state. The point being, it's really a city or a state that was founded by Lawrence was a city that was founded by Massachusetts colonists. So as a result of that, you know, when they mapped the town out, they chose Massachusetts Street as sort of their main street, which still exists today. It was kind of their main downtown main street. And get this, Matt, they made it 20 feet wider than any other street that they built.
That's phenomenal. So this game is really the true battle of the Bay State.
It really is. Yeah, 100%.
Okay, I love it. Let's move into the top five plus six man notable alumni again, because this is a first time opponent. We can actually go through people, which is easier than things like movies. Before we get into this, I do need to just mention again, For the record, there are three astronauts that went to Kansas. It feels like I'm in the Truman Show at this point and like someone just messing with the Wikipedias beforehand to throw in different astronauts. But I've, you know, done my follow-up research and I know that's not the case. But literally every single team we play has put someone in space. And Boston College, we haven't had anyone like near a spaceship ever. So I don't know what's going on there. I know we're building a new science institute on campus, so maybe that will help us. But yeah, overall not great. And with that, I'll defer to you for the first pick here in the alumni draft.
Okay. I got a couple package deals. I can do him. So Bill James went to Kansas University. Obviously, he was the godfather of analytics and, you know, the money ball baseball that came to be that never actually really worked, which people forget about. The Oakland A's never, I don't think they advanced past, what, the first round of the playoffs?
Yeah, they never got past the DS.
Obviously, Theo Epstein sort of adopted it and made it work a little bit, but Billy Bean never did. But Bill James, anyway, went to Kansas. I will say Moneyball is one of those movies. I love Moneyball. It's one of those movies where it's if it's on a Sunday afternoon, like I'm going to watch it. That's my non-football Sunday.
I'm a big Scott Hatterberg guy in general and Chris Pratt. So I think that's a perfect winner right there. Jonah Hill, Brad Pitt. It's got everything you want. A little upset as a math guy that you took Bill James for me. I feel like that's kind of a dirty move. If there was like a famous accountant, for example, I don't think I would steal that. But here we are. I'm going to go for my first two picks. First, Mandy Patinkin, who I think was in The Princess Bride, but most of our younger listeners will recognize him as Saul from the show Homeland, which for my money, season one of Homeland is the single best season of television in history. It quickly went downhill, I will say that much. It quickly went downhill, but season one was absolutely amazing. So I have nothing to add there.
That's a weird take, Matt. It's also weird that you put Saul Berenson ahead of Paul Rudd in...
Can you not spoil all these?
We'll get into the list, but the hell, Saul Berenson's your number two? Are you kidding me?
Again, because of the esteem that I put in season one of Homeland, I'm going to go with that. And then Matt, just as a little FU to you, third pick, I'm going to go with Paul Rudd, just as a little FU to you. So good luck.
Quick to your Homeland point? I just watched Ballers season three, and that's a better season of television than Homeland season one.
That is, okay. So I'm going to just move on because I don't think I can have an adult discussion with you, it seems like. So yeah, Paul Rudd. Paul Rudd's an absolute riot in everything that he's in. I don't even know what I would say is my favorite Paul Rudd movie. I do love him in Knocked Up when he does the sneaks off for the fantasy baseball draft. I mean, that's just something they get Matt Sui. But he's an absolute winner in everything that he's in. I Love You, Man. That's a great one. That's another really good one that he's in.
Forgetting Sarah Marshall,
he's very funny.
That's probably my favorite. He's almost better in those smaller roles where he's the surfing instructor. That's another movie where, like, if that one's on, you're going to watch. There's a lot of those. And I'll just give you my top three because I have it written down here. The Town, A Few Good Men, and Hitch, which I'm not proud of, but, you know, there's the trust tree. So those are my three movies that if they're on, I'm going to watch.
That's fair. National Treasure is the leader on my list. I call my list the National Treasure list. So that's a phenomenal one. But because we do have some football to get into, let's move this on. You go with the fourth overall pick here, your second pick.
Okay. Rob Riggle was a Kansas guy. And he's kind of cut from the Paul Rudd mole, mold. Yeah, okay. Where he's like really, really good in supporting roles. We talked about The Hangover, where he's the cop and he shoots Zach Galifianakis. He's awesome in Step Brothers. He's great in The Other Guys. He's also, you know, served in the military for, you know, a couple decades, which we'll forget, but he's an all-around great guy. It's a really good get for them. And then number four... Hey, Matt, here's another FU.
Number five.
Here's another FU to you. Clyde Tombaugh, who discovered Pluto.
I mean, yeah, but did he go to space?
He didn't go, but he discovered Pluto. Well, maybe that's he did, actually. I don't know.
Someone at Kansas, too, and I don't want to spoil the honorable mentions just yet, but someone at Kansas discovered helium. So they've got a good little science department there in the middle of nowhere, I guess, when you have nothing else to do.
Must have been in the 1400s.
1905.
That feels late to discover helium.
It does. I don't know what they did for balloons before then. That's why it was so sad in the 1800s. All right, for the sixth and final pick, I will go with Dr. James Naismith, the inventor of basketball.
He didn't go there, Matt.
I think he did.
Nope. He went to, because I actually searched this one out. He went to McGill. He's a Canadian.
Oh, all right. All right. Well, I'll cancel that pick then.
No, you can go with it, but it's just wrong.
No, I'll go with Gary Woodland, the U.S. Open winner.
Yikes.
He was on my honorable mentions. And then the only other honorable mentions I have, so you have a winner of Survivor Guatemala, who's also Miss USA, Danny Boatwright. If you can have a winner of Survivor, like there's only been, I think, 28 seasons so far, that's phenomenal. Spoiler alert, we have a member of the class of 2013 from Boston College in this upcoming fall season of Survivor. Phenomenal show. I recommend everyone get back into it. But yeah, there's only been less than 28, because there's been a couple of multiple winners. So probably like 26 winners overall. So very impressive. But yeah, be on the lookout for an Eagle on this coming season. And then Kevin Harlan, a great announcer, and also in the voice world, Tom Kane, who's the voice of Yoda and the Walt Disney World monorail.
That's pretty good. I mean,
pretty good. This
is one of the more loaded ones, which I didn't see coming.
Pretty strong. Yeah, pretty strong. Any Power 5 school always is going to have something.
That's true. I mean, they probably have like 30,000 people that go. Well, maybe not, because no one really lives out there. But anyway, Kate Spade is also, which I didn't see coming at all, who makes very overpriced purses. And then I have a note on James Naismith, and I know we do have to move on to football. Did you know, Matt, that he's the only basketball coach in Kansas history to have a losing record? And he literally invented the sport.
He would fit right in at Boston College.
Yeah, that's funny. That's, yeah.
So far, it's not funny. It's funny because it's unfortunate.
Yes.
All right. So in the effort to eventually get to football, I'm going to run through my tailgate ability very fast. So I just want to, first of all, apologize for last week. The challenge that we now try to record on Sunday and Monday nights is that the forecasts are obviously more volatile a week out. So I missed an opportunity last week to talk about Hurricane Dorian and the potential effects it would have had on the tailgate on Saturday morning, though I think it ended up hitting the Boston area earlier Friday night than originally expected. So the tailgate, from what I could tell, seemed pretty nice overall, which was great. Moving on to this week. The Friday night looks like an absolutely perfect fall weather afternoon. Crystal clear, crisp, bone dry, high of 69, start of tailgate, 62 at kickoff, dipping into the 50s by the end of the game, maybe just a light jacket, a couple of beers to warm the system. I can't get over that weather. That's like absolutely everything you want. It's a terrible opponent, but Power 5, so that still is better than nothing. You know, maybe get a few local alums or something like that to add to the flavor of the tailgate, make it a little more fun. Undefeated, like you say, always gets a big bump. Personally, I love the Friday game when I lived in Boston, because like leaving at work at 3 o'clock to go tailgate is literally a top 100 feeling in the world. Like there's nothing more exciting than that. But I do understand it's hard for people who work maybe outside of the city or coming not from downtown, or who have, you know, jobs that don't let them leave at 3 o'clock to maximize it. So that's, I guess, a slight knock overall, but still undefeated, fall weather, night game, pretty easy win. So a stress-free tailgate. I'm going 23.6.
Yeah, I'm pretty much right there with you. I actually have nothing on my list that you didn't say, so I'll just give you my prediction. 24.7, and I call it a prediction because I will be going to this tailgate. I'll be on Brighton, I think, but I might be in between Brighton and the mod lot, so come find me. I'll have koozies on me. So
yeah, a little bit of a plug, actually. If there's anyone in the Midtown Manhattan area on any time on Thursday and they want to shuttle like 50 koozies up to Other Matt in Chestnut Hill for the Friday night so he can hand some out. Obviously, you get to keep some for your group and all that. Definitely slide in the DMs, because we are looking for a mule to ship, again, 50 plus or so up to the Brighton area. We'll have a ton of Dewey's as well, but the Party in the Modes koozies are getting in tomorrow, and let me just say that they look absolutely incredible.
Yeah, 100%. So let us know. Send us a message, and we'll find you, or you can find us. We'll figure it out. But yeah, I'm with you on the Fridays. Can't wait for that. I'm playing golf Friday morning. It's shaping up to be a pretty good Friday for me, Matt. So excited about that. And it's a winnable game. It's a game we will win. We should win. We will win.
I think it's a little beyond winnable.
Yeah. So that always helps too. So I got 24.7. And yeah, looking forward to that. All right, so we're running out of show here, so let's talk a little bit of football. And everyone knows the story with Kansas. They've had, you know, a tough decade. But you think about it, I mean, as recent as 2007, these guys were the Orange Bowl champs. And you know, BC and Kansas were sort of had their stars crossed that year in 2007. They both sort of peaked, both ranked at number two in the country at different points that season. So that's sort of,
Kansas was up to number two at one point.
Yeah, they went like 11-1.
Was that under the big coach? What was his name?
Mangino. They had Mangino, yep. It was Mangino. They had Todd Reesing I don't know, someone at quarterback, and they had Aqib Talib as their kind of star defensive player. Yeah, they were loaded. But yeah, they won the Orange Bowl. They beat the Hokies. And yeah, I don't know if they finished it. They didn't finish at number two, but they were number two at one point, as was like University of South Florida that year. That year was
insane.
That
was a weird year. Yep, that was a weird year.
But anyway, so going back to last year, they fired David Beatty, who had gone a 6-42 in his tenure, which is Jim Christian-esque, if you ask me. They hired Les Miles, kind of out of nowhere to right the ship. So this year they're 1-1. They're coming off a very disappointing loss to the Chanticleers of Coastal Carolina, losing 12-7. Coastal Carolina, that was their first Power 5 win in school history, so not exactly what Les Miles had in mind. And, you know, coming into the year, people tried to draw parallels between Les Miles and Mac Brown, who, you know, just started at UNC. You know, both, you know, successful coaches coming out of retirement. And let's just say the directions that those programs are going in seem to be a little bit different so far.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I would imagine that we are looking at this game the same way Kansas would look at a basketball matchup with us. An easy win, but it's still a Power 5 conference opponent, so that's like exciting. Honestly, similar to our Richmond preview, there's just not a ton to add here. I will say that I think Les Miles, he certainly will help to get the ship at least, you know, presentable. I'm sure he's a phenomenal recruiter just from his days at LSU, and they always had, you know, good teams. But I think in the big picture of a in-game coach, he's severely overrated. A lot of that is thanks to the SEC bias, but his game management is not great. But he gets great players, so maybe he can rebuild. But fortunately, we don't have to worry about that this weekend. Overall, their offense stinks. Carter Stanley is QB1 for now. Came off 107-yard, zero touchdown performance against Coastal Carolina. Officially not great. As a whole, they're averaging 15.5 points per game against wildly inferior opponents. Again, not great. Running game's a little better. Khalil Herbert averaging like 7 yards per carry so far, which actually is not bad. And then they've got a 4-star running back behind him who is, I think, younger, so not doing as much. So the cover
Puka
is
Williams, the criminal, Puka Williams.
Oh, he's a criminal?
Yeah, he got suspended for domestic assault or whatever, something like that. Yeah, not great.
Yeah, bad guy. Okay. So overall, the cupboard is pretty bare. This is not Power 5 talent, so this is not an LSU Les Miles team, obviously. Defense gets a little better, giving up 328 yards per game against two bad teams. So I don't think that's, you know, a huge cause of concern for our offense. They haven't played anyone near the talent of Anthony Brown or A.J. Dillon or Zay Flowers. It's just a different beast than Coastal Carolina, which is, again, no offense to our guy, Shake Outlaw. Anything else you have to add on Kansas? Again, it was pretty quick because there's not a lot to tackle there. But
yeah, I'll say this. And you mentioned Les Miles not being a great in-game coach. If you think about it, there's a ton of similarities between Les Miles and Steve Addazio. Both have, you know, very large personalities. They're, you know, well-liked by players and coaches. They have you know, they employ a physical style that's predicated on, you know, the running game, strong offensive line, heavy use of tight ends. Both have caught a lot of flack from fans for what's viewed as an outdated approach, and that led to his downfall at LSU ultimately. So there are a lot of similarities between these coaches, I think. So I think it's sort of a neat game from that standpoint. Obviously, the difference being Les is in game three, doesn't have the personnel in place, and it's Kansas. They had nothing to begin with, whereas Daz is sort of coming alive in year seven, obviously. So I think you hit on all the key points. Defensively, they lost their entire front seven. So to me, this is a ground-and-pound type game for AJ. I think AJ could go off, you know, 200 yards, four touchdowns, something that we're all waiting to see. But it just depends if he, I don't want to overlook these guys, but it might be another game where he only plays through halftime and you get Bailey in there, you get maybe Garwo in there too, and get those guys some minutes as well. But overall, I mean, our strength is in the run game and the offensive line, and their front seven is not their strength, obviously. So, you know, I like the ground and pound game for this, and I'm really not all that worried. One thing I will say is there's a lot of Rutgers hype starting already. And we know that a lot of our guys are from Jersey. And what I don't want to happen is obviously for these guys to be looking ahead a week. You know, it's funny to call Kansas a trap game for Rutgers. But, you know,
it's not great.
Yeah. I mean, and it's really not. But this is just kind of ultra. You know, we saw what happened last year when our guys weren't 100% focused. And, you know, I've been saying all year that these cupcakes won't go 100% according to plan. Something will go wrong. They'll have to deal with some adversity. So just want to make sure we're fully focused on the game. I will add, too, that Les Miles is a good coach, and he's got nothing to lose. He's in year zero. So, you know, it could be a situation where he views this as a marquee win, and he goes for it. So, again, don't want to take these guys too lightly, but we should be able to out-physical them and really, you know, dominate them in the trenches and set up the run game and put up some points.
Yeah, so the line right now is, like you said, up from 18.5. It's up to 21.5. Over under 53, which gives it an implied score of around 37-16. That personally, I think, feels slightly generous to Kansas. Again, who only put up 7 at Coastal. Overall, I think we do run away with this, and I think we come out 48-10 is my final number. So not only the over hit somewhat comfortably, although the over is a little tight at, you know, only 5 points over, but the Eagles cover the spread with a significant amount of room to spare.
Yeah, I originally had something in that range, like 38-17 or something like that. And then I realized if these guys only put up 7 against a team that's called the Chanticleers, that ain't happening against us. So I got Eagles 38, Jayhawks 3, and we're on to Rutgers.
So you're taking the under here, for the record.
Yeah, but I'll tell you.
Significantly. You know, I mean, that's a significant under.
Well, sometimes I say that now, and then when the juices get flowing, I have a hard time taking the under. It takes the fun out of gambling. So we'll see. Stay tuned on that. But yeah, I mean, I just don't see Kansas put up enough points. So unless we go nuts, I think it could be an under situation.
Okay. I don't think that's not a crazy take, but I'm on the other side of that. So I guess we'll see next week. But thanks again to our sponsors, Blue Chew and MyBookie. That's bluechew.com, promo code armchair. And when betting on the birds to take the points and hit the over, unlike Matt, that is mybookie.ag, and use promo code chair. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fourth and Dude on both. And as always, be sure to keep an eye on our guys at Eagle Insiders BC 24/7. They're going to have a lot of good content this week, despite it being a lower tier opponent, definitely churning out a ton of stuff. And the recruiting trail is heating up. We're getting recruits left and right. This is the season where all the official visits are happening. So they got a lot of stuff to keep an eye on there. Hope to see everyone on Friday night. Like we said, Matt will be manning the lot up in Chestnut Hill, and I'll be at the usual Fourth and Dude table at Dewey's. Plenty of koozies to give away from both of us, so come say hi to either of us. I guess what? Just look for the koozies to find us? Is there a more descriptive hint we can give?
No, that's pretty much it.
I guess not, right? Like, I don't know how to describe how we look. I'm in a game day polo, probably. I don't know.
We're the guys yelling dude alert, probably.
If you hear dude alert, come find us. All right, thanks again for listening. Matt, the road to Charlotte keeps rolling on.
It's a dude alert, folks.
Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.